to the 2018 6th Annual Kessler Neurotrauma Conference, sponsored by Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation and Kessler Foundation. This conference presents an in-depth look at the art of delivering individualized rehabilitation services to this diverse patient population. Physicians, clinicians, and research scientists will provide insight into a range of topics, from mobility and fatigue to intimacy and sexuality to employment and empowerment, and will offer innovative, evidence-based strategies to effectively support both the patient and the caregiver. This podcast was recorded and produced by Joan Bank Smith, creative producer for Kessler Foundation, December 6th, 2018, at the Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation Conference Center, West Orange, New Jersey. In this lecture podcast, Dr. Denise Fife of Kessler Foundation presents Racial Ethnic Differences in Wheelchair Repairs, Breakdowns, and Consequences in SCI. Dr. Fife is a senior research scientist in the Spinal Cord Injury Outcomes and Assessment Research at Kessler Foundation. For more information about Dr. Fife, check out her online bio by clicking the link within this podcast description. To listen to more conference podcasts, information about Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation or Kessler Foundation, check out the links within the description of this podcast. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, listen to us on SoundCloud, and tweet with us on Twitter.
Dr. Denise Fife, who is a senior research scientist here at the Kessler Foundation, and Dr. Nathan Hogaboom, who is a postdoctoral fellow, are going to be presenting on racial and ethnic differences in wheelchair repairs, breakdowns, and consequences in persons with spinal cord injury.
Good evening, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Good.
All right, right, okay. No diabetic hazes from the lovely meal that's been served this evening. We wanted to talk to you a bit about wheelchair repairs, breakdowns, and consequences in SCI. Nathan and I just thought it would be great if we just tag team this presentation. He comes to us, well, I'll save him. He can do his own introduction. I'm a clinical psychologist by training, started at Kessler Foundation about 10 years ago. My research tends to focus on health disparities and spinal cord injury, particular functional disparities, and this is a project that I've been working on for a few years with our collaborators, Mike Boninger at Pitt, and as part of the SCI model systems. We don't have any conflicts of interest to disclose. Want to make sure I get that out of there. So, and thankfully, we at Kessler have been a part of the Northern New Jersey Spinal Cord Injury Model Systems for over 25 years. And had the wonderful opportunity to collaborate with our all of the SCI model systems, but specifically for this project, the folks at Pitt who are leading that that effort. And these studies are all funded by NIDLR, which is the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research. The learning objectives for today's session is to talk a little bit about EQUATE. That's our acronym for the study that we're working on with Pitt. And Nathan's also going to mention another project that Pitt's leading. It's called COMMIT. So that's a collaborative effort that has been a part of the SCI model systems for at least three cycles. So there's at least three waves of data. So it works out to about 15 years worth of data, and it's ongoing even in this cycle, so it's about 20 years worth of data that we'll be talking about. Nathan will be describing a little bit about, well, we both will, but in different ways, wheelchair repairs resulting from any resulting adverse consequences and the factors that contribute to those types of repairs and the consequences. And then I'll also be digging a little deeper and talking a little bit about wheelchair breakdowns and consequences observed across racially and ethnically diverse groups living with an SCI. So, wheelchair breakdowns and consequences. Do wheelchairs break down? Saying the obvious. Does that happen? In terms of your clients and your patients, what do you generally see in your clinical practice or when you're working with your clients in terms of wheelchair breakdowns and consequences? Sorry, say again?
Leg rests don't work.
Okay. Brakes. Are you getting these, Nathan? Okay. Okay. Sorry, what else? Poor seating? Cushion problems.
Tires.
Armrest problems.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Every port on the wheelchair I can, all right, so.
Sorry? The seat? Okay, all right. Batteries on the power wheelchairs? Okay, what else? The backs? Mm-hmm. Too wide or too narrow? I have a question about that one, but does it based on, okay. I was wondering about shape. Oh, okay. Potentially. Did you have your hand up? Or no, you're just rubbing the back of your head. Okay, as long as you move, you'll be called upon, right? Anything that we might have missed that you want to mention? No? Okay. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your experiences and patterns, some things that you have observed. Hopefully we'll do it justice in terms of like following up on this, because I'm curious then after we do our talk what you think about some of the findings. So we'll come back again to the audience and get some feedback on your observations based on what we're seeing. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Nathan. Let's get it started.
Thank you, Denise. Can you guys hear me okay? All right. There were some mic issues earlier. So my name is Nathan Hogeboom. I actually graduated from the University of Pittsburgh working with Mike Boninger, who Denise mentioned, who is the PI of the Equate module, or one of the PIs of the Equate module. And so, yeah, it's not, yeah, all right. We'll just cancel this. All right, better or worse, or the same? Okay, all right, so. My research was focused on a different aspect of wheelchair use, but I also became a little bit interested in the breakdowns because we've had a bit of a history. I think the first paper out of the lab was published in 2009, looking at the breakdowns and what are we termed adverse consequences, so what happens after the breakdown to individuals. So that's where I ended up getting involved in this, and then I came to Kessler, and which is another site that was involved in this particular project, and so we kind of just meshed and did a little bit of work on a project, and hopefully maybe more in the future. So we'll move on here. Perfect. So I usually like to start my presentations with this particular picture. Does this look familiar to anybody? Maybe yes, no. So this is what's called the ICF model, International Classification of Functioning, Disability, and Health. Essentially, what this model describes is that disability is not the case of this presentation is not when you have paralysis, the disability is not necessarily your paralyzed legs. Disability is actually a function of a lot of different aspects of life. It is your, essentially, you are not disabled. It is the environment around you that disables you. And so in this particular model, we have what are called activities, participation, your body functions and structures, which in this case would be your spinal cord injury or your traumatic brain injury, your stroke, which would relegate you to life in a wheelchair. You also have what are called personal factors, so race, ethnicity, income level, occupation, etc. You have environmental factors, which could be just the simple stairs in front of your house that without a ramp that prevent you from getting into a building, or it can be something like technology, in our case, wheelchairs. And so this model conceptualizes what it's like to have a disability in that it's the interaction of all these things that would actually disable an individual instead of actually having paralysis. And so what I'm focusing on for this presentation is technology, which would lie somewhere in this environmental factors. And then Denise will move on to other areas of the model. So as we know, as everyone in this room probably knows, the wheelchair is the single most enabling technology for someone with a spinal cord injury, for the gamut of spinal cord injuries. It is not only allows someone to be mobile, to get around, which can lead to employment or participation in social activities, et cetera, et cetera. It also is a way to manage a lot of secondary consequences that occur as a result of a spinal cord injury. For example, probably the most glaring is pressure injuries. So you have a power wheelchair that enables you to manage your pressure when you yourself cannot manage it. Same with the manual chair. So the wheelchair, anything that happens to a wheelchair, can eventually lead to some kind of disabling factor. It has impacts on activities. It allows you to, a proper wheelchair allows you to transfer into, say, the bathtub or onto the bed. It allows you to, say, get out of the house and visit with friends. It also allows you to possibly get a job, improve your employment or income level. And it also allows you potentially to overcome some of these environmental factors. And so the wheelchair really is one of the most enabling technologies. Here's just another conceptualization of the same thing I've been talking about. It allows you to move within an environment, move between an environment, potentially manipulate objects. So there was some research done about a little bit over a decade that, yes, the wheelchair is the most enabling piece of technology, but it is also one of the most, the greatest barriers to full participation. And so not only does, say, a wheelchair, the way it's designed, prevents someone to, say, get up the stairs or get up a curb. It also, other things that happen, which is the topic of our presentation here, the wheelchair can break down. And so I don't think I need to explain the consequences of the negatives associated with breakdowns to this particular crowd. But what I will talk about is how common they are, the types of breakdowns, which we all discussed. Somewhere between, and you might be able to speak to this, this is what the research shows, somewhere between 44% and 63% of people who have spinal cord injury have reported some component of their wheelchair needing a repair within the past 6 months. And these are from studies that have been done over the past decade, which is a lot. I mean, you can imagine if half of you were in your house and then your shoes just kind of fell apart, and you needed someone to come and repair your shoes, that would be quite annoying. And so what I'll actually be talking about is how these things can lead to some negative health consequences. All right, sorry. So yeah, here's just some examples like you guys were, oh, there we go, that you guys were mentioning of some wheelchair breakdowns. So flat tire, missing leg rest, a busted frame, a busted nut or a bolt. So here's some caster misalignments, some busted frames, a busted leg rest, and another busted frame. All these things can have some very negative consequences. Just some more statistics for you guys. Wheels and casters are the most common sites of breakdowns for manual chairs. As opposed to power chairs, you have the most common are electrical systems and power control systems. Now, wheels and casters can be particularly annoying because they are what makes your wheelchair mobile. So you have a broken caster, you have a broken wheel, you're therefore not able to be mobile anymore. The electrical systems, power control systems can be particularly negative because that is a lot of times for a power chair, that is what relegates your regulates your pressure control or your pressure management. So if you can't use your power controls, can't use your power tilt, your power recline, then you're not able to manage your pressure, and this can lead to potentially negative health outcomes. This is exactly what we found. Power wheelchairs tend to break down more than manual chairs, and this is simply because power wheelchairs are far more complex in their manufacturing than manual chairs. Manual chairs, most of them are this kind of simple frame with some wheels, the casters, a seat, and a backrest. So things can obviously break, but when you look at this thing right here, it's controlled by a bunch of motors and actuators, batteries, a bunch of wires that can come loose. And so these things tend to break down a little bit more often. And what also happens is when these things break the power chairs, there are more often adverse consequences associated with it. And this is really a function of someone who uses a power chair is typically going to be less mobile than someone who uses a manual chair. They're probably going to have something like tetraplegia, a higher level injury, and just not able to get around as easily. So a couple examples of consequences that we discussed, and you guys can chime in if you have any others that you've experienced. But these are the ones that we've seen is individuals will often report being stranded, so they can't use their chair, so they'll be just stuck in their house, essentially, stuck on a couch or on a bed, which is obviously not very good. Some of them will actually be injured, and often they will report either missing work or school or missing medical appointments, which can be pretty bad. So what we did, So what Denise just pointed out is that this particular image is from a study that looked at how the rates and breakdowns have changed over the past 10 years. And so what they've seen is the light gray bar on the left is the most recent data set from 2006 to 2011. The dark gray bar is from 2004 to 2006. So what this shows is that there actually is an increase in the number of breakdowns that have occurred over time. And what this points to is essentially decreases in the quality of the wheelchairs over time, which stems from poor manufacturing processes. And there are a whole plethora of reasons that this could be. Namely, or probably the one that is most responsible for these trends is decreases in manufacturing processes that are associated with competitive bidding process. So Medicare will often put out a bid, and they'll say, hey, we want to pay this much for a wheelchair, so make sure that you are able to manufacture a wheelchair they'll say, I want to pay this much for a wheelchair. It's up to the company really to decide how much money do I want to put into design, testing, fabricating, manufacturing the wheelchair. And so often, as companies will do, they will kind of lowball it. And what happens is you have an ineffective wheelchair. And an example of this is actually what happened to Invacare in 2012. If you guys are familiar with that, they got busted by the FDA because they weren't adhering to the manufacturing requirements of the FDA. And so they essentially, for 3 years, they were busted by the FDA, and they eventually had to kind of go back and redo their whole design, testing, quality control process. Now they're back to doing what they do, but that's just kind of an example of what's been happening. Thank you, Denise. So here's a study that we recently did, Denise was part of it. It was published in 2008, and what I wanted to do is, yeah, we know that these wheelchairs break down, but what happens to the person after it breaks down? Because you would think that if you are stuck in a bed or stuck on a couch, you are probably going to be at risk of developing these secondary injuries, like pain or pressure ulcers. You're going to be at risk for worse overall health, and it's exactly what I want to see. And so what I did was I looked at whether people who had breakdowns and people who had adverse consequences from breakdowns. So this white bar right here is someone who did not have a breakdown. The light gray bar here is someone who had a breakdown but no adverse consequence. So they weren't stranded, they weren't injured, etc. And then the dark gray striped bar are the people who had a breakdown and had an adverse consequence. And so what we found was that people who had a breakdown but no adverse consequence there wasn't really much difference in pain or perceived health in those individuals compared to people who didn't have breakdowns. People who had adverse consequences, however, showed worse health, they had worse pain, they had higher rates of pressure injuries and rehospitalizations caused by skin breakdown. So here's just a little graph. So no wheelchair failures, they maintain their health. if they had a wheelchair failure, but they weren't stranded, they were able to attend their medical appointments, and they were able to leave the home, they still maintained their health. However, if they had a failure, but they were stranded, missed a medical appointment, or unable to leave the home, that's when you saw the increases in pain or worsening of health. Which just is really emphasizes the need to prevent these particular breakdowns from happening. You can do that for a number of ways, which I'll get to in just a minute. Here's just another example of the actual rates of repairs that are needed over the years, reemphasizing what I was discussing earlier. And so as just a shout out to what Denise mentioned earlier, the Commit Project is essentially it's a module that teaches people how to either repair their wheelchairs or teaches clinicians how to repair wheelchairs when they see some kind of failure or breakdown on one of their patients or people in their clinic, or as well teach them how to repair their own wheelchairs as well. I put this up here just for you guys because we found that there's really not a lot of knowledge out there about this, particularly with the individuals themselves. All it really takes is a couple tools and the ability to manipulate these tools to repair these wheelchairs. So you can potentially prevent a lot of secondary consequences as a result of these repairs or breakdowns. And so here's the link for you guys. And now it's on to Denise, who hopefully has less mic problems. I mean, we could just wait till the end, I was thinking, yeah.
Does anyone have any burning questions? You know, we talked a little bit about the types of breakdowns, but what are some of the consequences that you see, though, in your practice in terms of...
Can you hear me now? Okay. Oh, I just figured I'm close up here, so I didn't want any interference. Sorry, I'm talking technical. Having a technical conversation at the same time. Sorry. So in terms of the consequences that Nathan mentioned, are there some things that you've seen in your work with clients or patients in terms of some of the consequences of wheelchair breakdowns that you'd be willing to share? I'm not giving. I can give you the mic, but anyone have any? Antidote?
No, so I was talking about my experience seeing patients who've had cushions that have malfunctioned and developed wounds from them, and also patients who have breakdowns or, you know, with power chairs in the community. They get stuck in a store, on a bus, at a bus stop or something like that, you know. And then how do they get home?
Right. And what do folks do? Like, how do you resolve those issues? I don't know. I mean, yeah, you can't call AAA, right? You know?
Any other anecdotal class stories that anyone wants to share? There's someone back here?
Oh. Thanks so much.
I would say one of the biggest functional impacts that we see is the reliability of return to work, because having a reliable means of transport to and from work. So a lot of times we're working with clients to make sure that they have access to those means. It's no different than if you're unable to maintain a vehicle or have unreliable access to public transportation. So that's a really big impact when we're talking with patients about wanting to return to work, especially our newer injury patients. It becomes a main focus of our discussions as far as maintaining equipment and the type of equipment that we order, and that conversation happens very soon in the process. So even when we're talking about before we prescribe the equipment, you know, are they someone that's going to maintain tire pressure? Are they someone that's going to maintain different types of caster alignments? Do we get aluminum casters versus poly casters? So those are conversations that I think we can start to have with clients sooner too, especially determining what type of environment they're going to go back to and what their functional goals are going back to.
Thank you. Those are some really helpful ideas. Okay.
I think that we, you know, Nathan gave us sort of an overview of the work that we've done, our research so far, in terms of looking at wheelchair breakdowns and some of the consequences. And I think the clinical implications that were just brought up are really important for us to think about, and how we approach our clients, patients, in a timely manner, particularly knowing that, you know, the wheelchair is such an important mobility device for individuals living with a spinal cord injury. So, as I'd mentioned to you before, a lot of my research looks at health disparities and racial and ethnic differences in SCI. And so what I'm going to do just is to dig a little deeper. You know, knowing that we have seen some changes in the pattern, like, you know, in terms of the proportion or the frequency of wheelchair breakdowns that are reported, you know, by that we found in this study, and that we're seeing on average about 50% of people living with SCI reporting a breakdown over the past 6 months, and with various, you know, being stranded being the number one negative consequence. But I was interested in looking a little bit more at trying to understand if there was any differences that we see in terms of racial and ethnic groups. And this sort of comes from, so my colleagues from Pitt, including Nathan, and some of my colleagues at Pitt have, you know, in their previous study, they identified the fact that they saw higher rates of wheelchair repairs that were reported among minority groups. And then there are also more minority groups were also more likely to report that they had a negative consequence in the past 6 months as a result of that wheelchair failure. And interestingly enough, like, you know, in terms of these previous studies, some of my colleagues in our discussions about what's going on, you know, one of the things that they found in terms of the types of wheelchairs that were being prescribed, they described them as a poorer quality type of wheelchair that's being prescribed. If you think about Medicare and Medicaid, the health insurance of the minority groups, possibly leading to a higher risk of breakdowns over time if you're prescribed a poorer quality wheelchair, and that could also lead to the negative consequences in the end. And also the fact that they were seeing that in these earlier waves of spinal cord injury model system data, they were also seeing that minority groups were less likely to have a backup wheelchair. However, my question to you know, my colleagues and to myself was, you know, in previous research that was done, we were, you know, much of our data looked at Black and white people living with SCI, or they would group together all minority groups and compare them to non-Hispanic whites. But we know from public health literature, from census, what have you, there's more diversity that we see, more heterogeneity and diversity that we see across, within actually racial and ethnic groups than across, but that's another conversation for another day. So I was interested in looking at the heterogeneity across racial and ethnic groups. And a lot of our literature, earlier literature in health disparities and SCI, actually didn't really account for this heterogeneity. But what we were seeing, though, over the past three decades in terms of racial and ethnic diversity in the SCI model systems is an increase in the proportion of racially and ethnically diverse individuals who are living with SCI. So similar to the proportion, like, you know, like you think about national trends and diversity in the national population. So, but interestingly, like, you know, our health disparities research in SCI has really, they've had an opportunity to identify health disparities in terms of, you know, like pressure ulcers, and the fact that, you know, pressure ulcers tend to be, you know, take for example non-Hispanic Blacks, when they're diagnosed with a pressure ulcer, it tends to be what, more severe, right, at a later stage relative to non-Hispanic whites. Health disparities in terms of functional outcomes, and then also health disparities in terms of equipment use as well, and that could be due to resources. In terms of access to the resources, also financial reasons, socioeconomic status, and things like that. So that's some of the background of some of the health disparities research that sort of has been going on, at least, in terms of assistive device technology and other kinds of disparities. But I thought it was important for us to think about, if we're going to address health disparities, then we have to understand what's going on for different racial and ethnic groups, and not just, you know, for lack of a better word, lump everyone together, knowing that there is a lot of diversity across, within and across ethnic and racial groups. So the purpose of this study was to dig a little deeper and understand that further. So what we were able to do was take a look at the SCI model systems data from 2011 to 2016, that time period, that wave of data. And we had about 9 different spinal cord injury model system sites that from around the country that had contributed data or collected data for the EQUATE module, SCI model systems module. So this was a secondary data analysis. It was a cross-sectional analysis, and that just means it was one time point, right? It wasn't, it's not an ongoing study in which you interview people, you know, year 1, year 2, year 3. It's just a one time point study. And so this secondary data analysis, what we did was I looked at people who self-identified as non-Hispanic white, non-Hispanic black, and Hispanic. They had to have had an SCI, living with an SCI for at least 1 year, be at least 16 years of age and older, also have identified that they use wheelchairs or primary means of mobility. So that's about at least 40 hours a week. Okay, and then I also had this point here, complete cases based on key outcome variables. Well, what does that really mean, right? Let's talk about it. So the outcome variables, so what we were trying to look at and understand were 3 outcome variables in particular. One was whether or not racial and ethnic groups had, okay, so in the past, I'm just going to read it. I don't know why I'm trying to ad-lib this. In the past 6 months, how many repairs did your wheelchair require? And if you, as long as you said one, as long as the individual said one or the participant said one, they were included in the sample. Then, amongst those people who reported that they needed a repair in the past 6 months, we also asked them, did you experience any adverse consequence as a result of the repairs? So from there, if you said yes to that question, then we asked you another question. What kind of consequence did you experience? Was it that you were stranded at home? Were you injured? Missed work? Missed medical appointments? I have a feeling we're probably missing some others, potential consequences that I'm sure people in the audience could probably share with us, but I'll just put that out there to you. Maybe we can come back to that near the end, but there might be something that we're missing here. These 4 categories or these 4 different types of consequences were actually identified in a national wheelchair study that was done in the 80s. So I'm sure there's some things we could be missing, but particularly when you think about the fact that it was like a national study of all individuals that were living with a disability, not specifically for spinal cord injury. So I'm sure there's some things that we could be missing. So I told you how we sort of broke down the sample, who we identified and who we wanted to, in terms of the data that we wanted to look at. So, let me just go back for a second. So when I said that whole line about complete cases on key outcome variables, so as long as the participants had data for each of these outcomes, they were included in the analysis. Okay? So I'm not going to really get too technical, but we ran descriptive analyses to tell us the means, the frequencies, the overall patterns that we saw. And then we also ran regression models. So we were controlling for any of the variables that can contribute to any kind of noise or any of the variation that we were seeing across racial and ethnic groups to look at the outcomes of the association between race and ethnicity on those 3 outcome variables that I mentioned to you. So we had a sample of about 702 participants in the sample, and we can see from, let me just turn here, try to catch up with where we are right about now. So it's predominantly male. I don't know that I need to point to anything. On average, we see that Hispanic participants were enrolled at a younger age relative to the, maybe I do need to point. Let me go ahead and do that. Okay. So the average age for participants was about 44, right? When we take a look at that across racial and ethnic groups, we see that the Hispanic population participants were younger, relatively younger. In terms of, we only have about a third or so that were married, reported being married. And this was, when we looked up among the people who were married, this was non-Hispanic Black participants were significantly less likely to report being married relative to the other groups. And, you know, this, we think about, again, and this is, you know, we think about this just conceptually in terms of an important variable. You think about a wheelchair breakdown and the consequences. So if you've fallen, who's going to be there to help you get up, right? And so if you're married, you may be more likely to have social supports in the home or wherever you are to assist you, right? So thinking about that, and so that was included in our regression model, definitely. What am I doing here? What did I do? Okay. About half our participants were living with paraplegia. That was pretty consistent across all racial and ethnic groups. In terms of year post-injury, about 11 years post-injury, and that was also consistent across all the groups, okay? Socioeconomic characteristics, we know that in terms of health disparities research, we know when we're looking at race and ethnicity as a key variable in our analyses, we can't not account for socioeconomic factors. They pretty much go hand in hand along with race and ethnicity factors, right? So, but so we have about 40% of our of the participants reported. Did I knock this thing out? No. Okay. Living below the poverty level, and about 60% of them were self-identified as non-Hispanic, Black, and Hispanic. So we saw some differences there. In terms of negative financial strain, I think this is a typo, so I apologize for that in advance in terms of the numbers that were listed. This was significant, but I think there was a typo in terms of who reported. I know negative non-Hispanic Blacks reported significantly higher negative financial strain relative to the other groups, but I'm not sure what happened with that, so I apologize for the typo. In terms of private health insurance, overall, so we see about 36% reporting that they had private health insurance, but a significantly non-Hispanic Blacks were significantly less likely to have private insurance. In terms of education, different patterns generally seen, but broad strokes, we're just seeing, you know, a higher proportion of both non-Hispanic Black and Hispanic participants reporting either high school or lower, less than high school education. And in terms of employment, we know that employment rates among people living with an SCI is very low based on model systems and other national data. But even amongst the folks who are employed, we see significantly lower rates among non-Hispanic Black and Hispanic participants relative to white, non-Hispanic whites. Wheelchair characteristics. Here in terms of, we have about a quarter of them reporting that they are their primary wheelchair is a power wheelchair. But a higher proportion of the amongst these individuals, 40% of them were non-Hispanic Black relative to about 20 to 24% among Hispanics and non-Hispanic whites and Hispanics. Sorry, I don't know what, I'm having a really hard time with this microphone. About three quarters are living with a manual wheelchair, and the difference there, I guess, is that we see a higher proportion of Hispanics relative to non-Hispanic Blacks living with a manual wheelchair. In terms of wheelchair funding, so we wanted to ask people, who was paying for your wheelchair? And we see that about 50% reported, so this government variable was actually, we used Medicare and Medicaid to populate that variable. So you see about 50% of them reporting having their wheelchair paid for by Medicare, Medicaid, and a significantly higher proportion of non-Hispanic Black and Hispanic participants had that funding for their wheelchair. In terms of having a backup wheelchair, even though this wasn't significant, about 50% of our participants reported having that. And I mean, just based on the numbers, we see that, yeah, that we didn't see any differences in this sample, at least in terms of having a backup wheelchair. So, wheelchair consequences and breakdowns and consequences by race and ethnicity. Generally, what we observed was that, let me get my table out here. I can talk numbers. We didn't really see any differences across racial and ethnic groups in terms of wheelchair repairs that were reported in the last 6 months. On average, it was about 60%. of them reported, of the participants reported having a wheelchair breakdown in the last 6 months, and this didn't really vary much by race and ethnicity.
And then in terms of negative consequences, can you hear me at the back? I can speak pretty loudly, but yeah? Okay, great, thanks, okay. Appreciate that. So in terms of negative consequences, we have about 36% of the sample report, or the participants reporting having a negative consequence. And amongst those, the variation amongst the people who reported a negative consequence, really did, we see that a higher proportion of non-Hispanic Black and Hispanic participants reported having a negative consequence, but this was not statistically significant. But the pattern is there. So then we said, okay, let's look at the types of consequences that were reported by race and ethnicity, and this is where things got a little bit interesting. In that, well, one, we'd already noted, right, that being stranded is the number one negative consequence that's reported, and that's consistent in this sample. But where we see some variation here is that relative to non-Hispanic whites, non-Hispanic Blacks were significantly, participants were significantly more likely to report being stranded relative to other groups. Being injured, there really wasn't much variation. We're seeing about, that was the next one in line at about, actually no, the next most commonly reported negative consequence was missed medical appointments. None of the Black participants or non-Hispanic Black participants reported missing medical appointments, but we see significantly higher proportion of Hispanic participants reporting missing medical appointments. And missing work and being injured, there was that on average it was about 3% on average were reporting missing work or being injured as a negative consequence. So we ran our models and tried to account for everything, and these patterns actually stayed the same. And so when we controlled for things like marital status, like income, like having a backup wheelchair and education and things like that. So these results were pretty consistent in that non-Hispanic Black participants were, I think, 2.5 times more likely to report being stranded relative to non-Hispanic whites. And the Hispanic participants, in terms of missed appointments, when we ran those logistic models were about 2.3 times more likely to report missed medical appointments. Any thoughts, reflections, or comments at this point? I think this is an interesting point. An interesting point in the discussion to say, hey, so what do you think? Does this make sense? Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the question. Yes, this missed medical appointments. I'm not sure that was an anomaly to me. I'm not sure how to explain that one. I'm not sure what that means.
Because they don't follow up with the doctor anyway, so they didn't miss any appointments because they didn't have any appointments.
No, what we asked them was if you had a wheelchair breakdown, you had a negative consequence. Did you miss a medical appointment? Were you injured? Did you miss work, or were you left stranded? And so what we see is that a higher proportion of our Hispanic patients were saying, or participants were saying, they missed their medical appointments because of the wheelchair breakdown.
So you said you were surprised because they didn't report any missed medical appointments.
They did miss medical appointments. They're saying there's a significantly higher proportion of Hispanic patients that are reporting that they did miss medical appointments because of the wheelchair breakdown. You're talking about the non-Hispanic, but it could be. Okay. It could be. And, it's interesting, we don't,
we don't know that, but that's okay. That's definitely worth exploring, I think, you know, in terms of the context, you know, understanding the context of why that could be, you know.
And that's definitely a next step in terms of the research, exploring that. But no, anomaly that I can't explain is really this bar right here. I'm a little stumped on that one. So any thoughts or ideas, I would welcome them. Say again? Oh, but the Hispanic patients were saying that they do, and they miss them because of that, because of the wheelchair breakdown. They may not. So that, yes, that I get for the zero bar, I do. But the Hispanic bar was the green bar, and they were saying that they were more likely to say that they missed their appointment, and I'm not sure why. Why is it that they're missing their appointment? Could it be that they had more appointments to miss? I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to explain that one. You know, that was the bar that I thought was curious to me. But yeah, in terms of the non-Hispanic Black, they might not have had appointments that they missed over the last 6 months to account for that zero. Okay, sorry, going way over time here. So we had these conclusions in terms of, so we didn't see any differences across racial and ethnic groups in terms of their breakdowns that were reported. And in terms of negative consequences, non-Hispanic Black and non-Hispanic and Hispanic participants were more likely to report negative consequences relative to non-Hispanic whites. And these differences were associated with being employed, I think someone had mentioned that in the back, low income and private health insurance. Those were some of the key covariates in our models. Some limitations, sample sizes across minority groups. So in terms of like future research and what I'd like to do is like oversampling for non-Hispanic Black and Hispanic participants in terms of, you know, so that has to do with statistical analyses and what's required for some of those higher level statistical analyses anyway. And then the limited understanding of the reasons for the disparities. So in terms of those, why is it that we're seeing that Hispanic participants are, you know, reporting more, missing more medical appointments, or why is it the Blacks are not missing any? Or, you know, even in terms of being stranded, what does being stranded really mean? You know, it could mean different things to different people, you know, so... learning a little bit more about the reasons that were reported, I think, was important to understanding, to thinking about, well, then what do we do if you are stranded, right? What do you do if you are missing more medical appointments or injured or things like that? So learning a little bit more about that, I think, will be helpful. And also, I think we have some major studies that are doing longitudinal studies over time, looking to see, like, are there patterns that we see in terms of wheelchair breakdowns and the type of consequences at different time points in living with a spinal cord injury. Are people more likely to have more wheelchair breakdowns, you know, 10 years post-injury because they've had the same wheelchair? No. What is it? What Medicare, Medicaid gives you? It's for 5 years? About 5 years? Right? So about, is it the five-year point that we're seeing more breakdowns or different time points along those lines, right? That we're seeing more breakdowns and more negative consequences over time. So those are some questions I have, some of the implications. I think that, you know, some of these results, like I said, can help us really sort of target where we might need to make some changes for specific groups. If folks are reporting that they're more like if non-Hispanic Black groups are reporting they're more likely to be stranded, you know, well, are there some things that we could do in terms of helping folks with who are stranded? And I don't even know what some of the consequences of being stranded could be. Could it be more medical, more wounds for someone who's stranded? I'm not sure if they're stranded in their home, if, you know, hearing reports about people who are transferring from their wheelchair to their car, getting stuck, stranded at that point, or if you're stranded at when you're out and about, you know, are there some things that we can do just based on the type, whether how stranded are you, where are you stranded, and what are some of the implications of that? So. And those are some references. These are just some references from our colleagues from Equate and from Pitt. And I think that's about it. Thank you very much for your time this evening.
To listen to more conference podcasts, information about Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation or Kessler Foundation, check out the links within the description of this podcast.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, listen to us on SoundCloud, and tweet with us on Twitter.